Hey there, it's Lauren Chooljian. You're listening to a special holiday edition of Stranglehold from New Hampshire Public Radio. We're going to take a little time off, and hopefully you are too. But before we do, we wanted to check in on that other first in the nation state.
Hello, Iowa!
Aloha, Iowa Democrats!
Hello, Iowa!
We thought it was about time we gave some love to Iowa. In this special bonus episode, we're going to hear about how Iowa became actually first and find out if there are any shared experiences between our two early states. Our friends at Iowa Public Radio have also been hustling on a podcast called Caucus Land. And the hosts Kate Payne and Clay Masters are here to chat with me. Hi, guys. Happy holidays.
Hey.
Thanks. Hey, Lauren.
So festive. you guys didn't really lean into the holidays as much as I was hoping.
Merry Christmas.
Are you just so exhausted of the caucus? You just got nothing left for Santa?
Gotta like make it through the week.
Clay, I tried as hard as a New Hampshire person could to explain what the Iowa caucus is and how it's different from the New Hampshire primary, but I think it's probably best to throw it over to the experts. So can you first just in general, Clay, what is a caucus?
So a caucus is not a, you're not voting, right? Like you're showing your support for a candidate. The Democrats and the Republicans, they do it a little bit differently. We're, of course, focusing on the Democratic side. And the way that this works on February 3rd, 2020, is that people are going to gather in their neighborhoods. They're going to go to high school gymnasiums, libraries in rural parts of the state. They'll go to homes. And they will show their support for who they're supporting by physically moving into a corner of a room to support a candidate. So basically, somebody gets up and says, I am going to caucus for Pete Buttigieg, and these are my reasons why. And I'm going to caucus for Elizabeth Warren, and these are my reasons why. And so people kind of break into their groups. They find, you know, their little corner. And then if the candidate doesn't hit 15%, basically, of the room, then they have to go to their second choice. That person is no longer viable. The candidate's not viable. And at the end of the day, or at the end of the night then, you know, which could take hours, we'll have an idea of who won the Iowa caucuses. We should.
It's important to point out, one, that the parties are running these processes. It's not the Secretary of State. You know, it's all run by volunteers and well-meaning people. Just the work involved, there's so much math. You know, they call it caucus math because with the caucuses, you're not reporting, you know, one person, one vote results. You're earning delegates and delegate equivalents. And there are all of these calculations involved, some that go to like the fourth decimal place that these normal people are trying to understand. And, you know, the weight of potentially a decision, you know, for who could be president is hanging on this. It's just, it's an incredible amount of pressure for these people.
You know, in the second episode that we did on Caucus Land, NPR's Don Gagne came in and talked about in 2008 when he was in Iowa observing the caucuses, the second choice mattered because overwhelmingly, when people had to break up because Joe Biden was no longer viable or whoever the candidate was that didn't reach that 15%, you know, Hillary Clinton had been dominating the polls going into that cycle, going into that caucus night. But overwhelmingly, when people had to go to their second choice, it wasn't Hillary Clinton, it was Barack Obama. So, I mean, like, that's one of the reasons why when I'm always out on the trail talking with people, I'm regularly just asking people, like, who's in your top three? Because for months, people that are curious about who they're going to nominate or who they're going to support on the caucuses have it kind of narrowed down to a top three or so. So, I mean, like, I'm just going to be watching to see, like, what happens after that first round of support is done and who is left standing in that room.
And, Kate, when, like, since when have you guys been the first caucus in the nation?
It's back since 1972 that Iowa became first. And it really all started, though, with the 1968 Democratic National Convention in Chicago. This was, you know, a really contested convention where party leaders and bigwigs were sort of pitted against party activists. And the party activists were really upset with who the party leaders ultimately ended up choosing. And so in that process, the Democratic Party really had sort of a come to Jesus moment and said, you know, we need to redo across the country how we nominate candidates.
Right. This is where our like origin stories kind of coalesce.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you saw a lot of new recommendations from the DNC as far as incorporating, you know, sort of rank and file voters and sort of putting that power to those voters as opposed to the party bigwigs. And so out of all those changes, different states, you know, had to change how they were running their process. And in the state of Iowa, in order to meet these new transparency requirements, new rules, the state basically figured out they had to move their contest further up in the calendar. There are sort of mixed stories we've gotten from reporters versus historians as far as how calculated this decision was to ensure that Iowa became first. But it was really in 1976 with Jimmy Carter, who I know is, you know, sort of lauded in New Hampshire as well. But he is really credited with crystallizing the Iowa caucus and coming to the state early and really believing that if he could have a showing here early on, he could carry that momentum into New Hampshire and just run with it. And of course, he took it all the way. And ever since then, people have, by and large, been following in his footsteps.
And I think also, too, just to like hit one of my favorite things about the Iowa caucuses from that Jimmy Carter quote-unquote victory is that like it is so Iowa caucus-goer. He didn't actually win.
Yes.
He came in second to uncommitted.
Yes.
Yes, I was thinking about that when you were talking about asking people for their like favorite top three because obviously he was not anyone's favorite top one.
No. Yeah.
But there were still people on caucus night. They were like, I don't know.
Who's I've this guy?
I just love that we share this Jimmy Carter origin story. I wonder, though, do you guys have a similar history of fighting to stay first like we do? Like, are there guardians of the First in the Nation caucus?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, the party chairs are always, I mean, they argue about everything and they spew press releases against the other candidates all the time. But when it comes to the sanctity of First in the Nation, you know, they're committed in standing in solidarity to protecting Iowa's place. And then, like, you know, that Secretary of State of yours in New Hampshire, I mean, they're very quick to point out, you know, we have a very good relationship with Mr. Gardner. You know, we just spoke with him and he's okay with it. You know, the choices that we're making. But at the same time, too, there's this criticism that's lobbed at Iowa every 4 years about not being inclusive enough. It's excluding people who can't make it, you know, people that are overseas with the military, maybe somebody that works a night shift or has multiple jobs or children that they don't want to take. And so one of the things that they had proposed early on in this cycle, and we won't get too deep into the weeds of this because it's a moot point at this juncture, but that there were these virtual caucuses, which were going to allow people to use their phones basically to show their support on caucus night. But the DNC basically pulled the plug on that because they were concerned about cybersecurity. And so there are always criticisms lobbed at Iowa every 4 years for not being inclusive enough and then also being a overwhelmingly white state and not being as representative of the rest of the country, which I know y'all in New Hampshire get the same criticism.
Oh, big time.
Everybody here always makes the argument, hey, if you consider the first four carve-out states, we're representative of the country. But, you know, there are questions about that, especially in Julian Castro, the former HUD secretary, has been raising that concern a lot.
And I'll add there, Lauren, you know, one of the other potential enemies of the caucus is like the success of the caucus itself. One of the things that we're seeing here in Johnson County, where I am, which is the most reliably Democratic county, is that so many people are getting involved in this process. In some of these precinct locations, you could have 1,000 people packed into a room that's built for 300. And that's just not tenable at some point.
Right.
You know, this process was built, you know, it dates back to before Iowa was a state. You know, it started when Iowa was still a territory, and it truly was in people's farmhouses and living rooms, you know, with a dozen people. And it's just not, it's not a process that can scale. And that's really starting to show in some of these densely populated areas in particular.
See, that is so interesting to me because, A, I had no idea that that was an existential threat, and B, because for us, one of Secretary of State Gardner's go-to, you know, defenses of the primary is our turnout, that it shows how responsible and how seriously we take this, we meaning the voters. So that's so interesting to hear that.
It's going to be some people some Democrats in the state are really concerned heading into this cycle in particular of just it could be a mess. It could be a mess. And again, when you have volunteers who are in charge of this process, I mean, just trying to count 1,000 people in a gym, like it's just, you know, when people have been campaigning, you know, for a year, 2 years, and they're so excited to finally be able to express their support, and you're just trying to count them. It can be, it's herding cats. It's herding cats.
Right. And so, Clay, I want to, before I let you guys go, talk a little bit about the show in general. The difference mm-hmm. I've noticed between you, your show and our show is that we've kind of stayed away from the campaign trail, but you guys have really, like, gone right in the thick of it, and you've interviewed candidates. Mm-hmm. And so I would be curious to know, when you were planning, what were some of the, like, must-have Iowa events that you knew had to be included in the show? Otherwise, it would not be a good representation of the caucus experience.
Well, we knew that we needed to have an Iowa State Fair show. So the Iowa State Fair is ridiculous because it's in Des Moines. It's packed into the heart of the city. And I mean, like, there's, you know, the big boar competition where the fattest pig wins. There's, you know,
the
horse racing.
The big boar competition?
Yeah. The big boar competition.
Yeah. There's a husband calling competition, which I love.
Excuse me, what? I think you guys live on a different planet.
So anyway, like, this thing is already, like, a ton of people go there. There's a wide variety of entertainment. There's the Ferris wheel. There's all this. But then on the lead up to the Iowa caucuses in that, you know, presidential cycle, there is a parade of presidential candidates that show up and they get on the Des Moines Register political soapbox.
I got some tape of that, Clay.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, let me play it for you. It's an excerpt of your Caucusland episode on the State Fair.
Welcome to the 2019 Des Moines Register political soapbox.
That's the newspaper's political editor, Rachel Stassenberger. She regularly introduces the candidates, always starting out with some ground rules.
We expect Iowa nice. What that means, don't hold up your signs, because then people behind you can't see. Try not to heckle. That's just not very nice, is it? Feel free to cheer. Feel free to interact with the candidates. But let's make it all very Iowa nice. Got it? All right.
This stage is famous among politicos, but as Stassenberger points out, it's a pretty simple setup.
It's not huge and ostentatious at all. And there are Iowans standing there and sitting down in the heat. It can rain on them. There's lots and lots of media because of the tradition of the soapbox. And so there are all sorts of ways that in these non-scripted interactions, candidates can go wrong.
Like this exchange between the eventual 2012 Republican nominee Mitt Romney and the crowd gathered in front of that stage.
We have to make sure that the promises we make in Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare are promises we can keep. And there are various ways of doing that. One is we could raise taxes on people. That's not the way. Corporations are people, my friend. We can raise taxes on. Of course they are. Everything corporations earn ultimately goes to people. So, where do you think it goes? Whose pockets? Whose pockets? People's pockets.
That corporations are people line stuck with Romney throughout his campaign.
The fair is full of political and cultural landmines. During the 2007 state fair, Republican candidate Fred Thompson infamously wore designer shoes. The wardrobe choice undermined his appeal to working-class voters and dogged his campaign.
Some candidates just skipped the soapbox altogether, like both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump did in 2015.
Clinton toured the fairgrounds. Trump did too, but first he flew kids in his helicopter over the fairgrounds.
Well, it just is going to be very exciting for the kids, and I know the kids are going to go up. We have quite a few children going to take rides today. So where are the children? Get them over here. That's great. I love children. I love Iowa. Great place.
That's so good. And I got to ask you, do you guys get annoyed that we also call ourselves first? Like, do you feel like you're the real chosen first in the nation? Like, what's the vibe about New Hampshire from Iowa?
I feel like the perception of New Hampshire from Iowa is that it is a threat.
Oh, you know, really?
It's always, yeah, yes. I mean, because there's so much pressure on Iowa being first and on the caucuses in particular. And any time somebody tries to tinker around with the caucuses. You know, the DNC is saying you got to let more people in. You got to, you know, have a way to do recounts, you know, on ballots. But we can't have ballots in Iowa because then New Hampshire and Secretary of State Bill Gardner will swoop in and take first away from Iowa. And
that's
so,
right, because
you know,
then it,
Iowans can't have that.
That's right. Clay, what do you think? How do people think about New Hampshire?
Well, I mean, like, if you look at the calendar, Lauren, what comes first, Iowa or New Hampshire?
It's Iowa. It's Iowa. I'm clear on that.
Like, it's first in the nation. It's like they're always, they're proud of themselves and they're puffing, Iowans are puffing their chests up as being first in the nation, but there's that side eye, you know, they're looking at New Hampshire.
Yeah.
You know, are they okay with how proud I feel right now? Yeah, I can be proud.
Does this look too much like a primary?
You know, yeah, exactly.
That is the question constant. From us. Is it a different enough thing that we can keep that window? Or I should say, that's Secretary Bill Gardner's argument, that it's got to be different enough. Otherwise, you know, we would jump.
Do people from New Hampshire look at Iowa and think, oh, that's cute? Like, oh, they have their little caucuses.
Cute.
Yeah, first in the nation, air quotes.
I mean, the puffing of the chest thing just really resonated with me because that is the vibe here too, where it's just like it's all New Hampshire or nothing for the people who are very invested in it. But as far as normal people, I think it's all like they got their thing, we got ours.
Yeah, and do you guys get the same thing too where, you know, when the national media or somebody is talking, a political expert is talking about Iowa, they'll talk about like, oh man, everybody's so engaged, right?
Yes.
Like the entire state knows.
They're so smart.
They know who Steve Bullock is.
It's
and
not
they
true.
Know,
it's not true.
No, it's not true. So many people, there have been so many instances where like you're just in public. There was this time where when we interviewed Cory Booker that he's a vegan and he wanted one of those plant-based Whoppers. And so we stopped at a Burger King so he could get one. And, you know, he was in line and there were people behind him. And Kate, I think you were standing closer. But I mean, like one of the people there was like, didn't even know who Cory Booker was. And the guy with him had to like explain to him that he's a senator from New Jersey who's running for president. I mean, like people just aren't as plugged in across the board, across the state, as sometimes I think Iowa gets represented as being.
Well, you guys, this has been such a joy. I'm so glad we got to do this. Kate Payne, Clay Masters of Iowa Public Radio, hosts of Caucus Land.
Thank you, Lauren.
Oh,
great show.
Thanks. You're welcome. You can find Kate and Clay's show Caucus Land wherever you get your podcasts. This bonus episode of Stranglehold was produced by me, Lauren Chulgen. Stranglehold is edited by NHPR's Director of Content, Maureen McMurray, and News Director, Dan Barrick. Jack Rolico is Senior Producer. Rebecca Lavoie is NHPR's Digital Director. And Sarah Plord made our beautifully aggressive podcast graphics. Special thanks to Dad, Barry Chulgen, who helped us name this podcast. Original music by Jason Moon and Lucas Anderson. We'll be back in a couple weeks with more episodes of Stranglehold. But until then, Stranglehold is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.